Why would I have to meet all those people and read all those business requirements when I can use AI to synthesize it all down into technical requirements that I just quickly review and distribute?
Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money.
All right, welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. We have Mike with us now. Eric will be joining us in a bit. And great, how's it going, Mike?
Pretty good. Been staying nice and busy. How about you?
Yeah, I bet. Well, things have been good. I just came back from another Dreamin event, which is great. So definitely recommend those for people in the Salesforce ecosystem. The community is still going strong, and there's so many people who've not yet been involved in that. So I'll share a little bit about that. But on this episode, I think I'd certainly love to talk about the latest info on the Swiss AI initiative. I think it offers a very interesting element. I want to talk about the open model initiative on the same front, which is very interesting as just a parallel track of gaining AI capabilities. I'd certainly love to give an update on what you're learning about how awesome it is to be a technical architect at Salesforce. And then I'm sure we'll have a few elements. I got a second project I want to talk about that I leverage Klein for those who are thinking about trying to get into vibe coding or and coding copilots. So lots of good stuff today. Good to be together.
Love that. Sounds fun.
So one aspect that I thought I'd chat about. So yesterday I was part of SoCal Dreamin, and I got to share again the roadmap to for Agentforce acceptance and adoption, really talking about the preferred way as I see it for onboarding and enlisting people into your AI kind of endeavors and vision. So that, I think the important thing, and we're seeing a lot more over the last 2 weeks. I don't know if you've recognized it, but on LinkedIn there's a lot more recognition that there's something going on in the AI world. Like we may be ending one chapter and starting another one, right? So some people call it a bubble. Some people call it, AI, kind of version one, if you will, that was focused on this digital labor that, is to replace people. And I think we're coming to a realization that the kind of augmentation aspect is really important. And certainly whatever happened to the 4,000 quote unquote hands that Mark spoke about, was a ca you know a little it struck a chord for a lot of people on a diff a lot of different perspectives. And so I'm excited about that because that's really the core of my vision and my message is that it's a cape for our roles, not an escape from our roles. And it's those people who are in our organizations who are the most fit and valuable in actually figuring out where can AI transform our value prop and who is going to be the one to actually iterate this, test it, and validate it as we move forward because they're the experts. So really need to see that. I don't know if you've observed anything kind of in the if you've had any time to come up for air from the training.
Honestly, I've been so deep in it. I've just been learning about the tools and what's going to serve me for what I'm doing right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's good. One example I read today was just somebody was talking about that there's kind of this, this transition happening here where people thought, well, maybe AI was something that I could just kind of season my existing process. I can kind of sprinkle it on there and have it help. And I think that they're finding that that's probably not the case, that we essentially have to make a decision much like let's take two fast food experiences that people might have. Now, so if you go to a modern McDonald's, you're going to go in there and the whole place is going to be, there's a few less chairs. They're generally kind of firm and easy to clean. There's a couple kiosks for you to order. And there's a few people that are kind of behind the wall in the kitchen. It's a kind of focused, technology first, efficient environment. That's what you get. They don't make any apologies for it. When people go there, they know what they're getting. They're getting in and out quickly. And, it's like they're turning into almost to like a ghost kitchen, right? Where most of the food is takeout. Most of the food is delivery, and you know what you're gonna get, and you just get it and you're happy. And the other side is someone like Chick-fil-A, which is like, hey, we're not in the efficiency business, we're in the hospitality business. We're here, you come in, there's a lot of engagement right when you come in the door. There's a lot of people checking on you at your table. You don't order at a kiosk, you order with a person. The person gives you feedback, makes suggestions, and ultimately they're coming and checking on you at your table. And, it's just a different vibe, right? So a lot fewer takeout orders than McDonald's, still a few, but a lot more people in the dining room. And I think that paradigm seems to be converging where people are seeing like, all right, AI can really transform our entire process, but we have to figure out what we're optimizing for. Are we optimizing for like Uber efficiency? Because this is what really adds value. This is a use case that, really needs to just be efficient, quick. Maybe it's research, maybe it's inquiry, I'm not sure. But there's the other side. Is there something that's like we need to optimize for human engagement, empathy, customer service, and because you really can't do both. Which I think is a really healthy kind of advancement in our thinking, and maybe will help us find better and more successful use cases because the latest data from MIT shows less than 10% of AI projects have any kind of positive P&L impact in the business. And so they
I
highlight
feel
that
like,
there's, go
sorry to
ahead.
interrupt you. I just think that there's an aspect of like crawl, walk, run, and not every company is ready to just jump to like the most advanced AI like implementation. And like I think that there's a lot to think about, like the ethics, the moralities, like what options do you have before you just bring this stuff into the loop? Like I know you talk about the people first methodology a lot, right? And it's like, are there opportunities to upskill people, right? And before you take out some of the, repetitive work and like, what does that all mean at scale? Because eventually, like, you optimize all this stuff and then you're competing at another level and now your business grows into a different tier. Well, you're now going to need to hire people to compete at that new tier or advance yourself even further, which maybe the AI can help you do, but like, why didn't it already get you that new plateau? Well, right, like with what was there. So I don't know, like I've just found it like a challenge when, my whole journey to figuring out this AI stuff was what's the new ceiling? And I just kept pushing it further and further until I was having the success that I did.
I think it's a really good point, and my I think really, if you think about the if you had if you were able to bring in a bunch, like let's say you got brought in an AI expert, but they didn't know the business, they didn't know the core kind of values or the secret sauce or the history of the business, but they built great technology versus taking the people who do know the brand promise, they do know the customers, they do know the history, they do know, right, like the overarching life cycle of the product, and now they kind of slowly upskill and grow into the capabilities of leveraging AI both with customers and with themselves. That certainly seems to be a preferred route, but it is more circuitous and it can take more time. But I think the outcome is likely much better than simply looking at it like, hey, we're just going to bring in technology to just optimize here, which then could put the additional, like the existing staff at risk because of all the political ramifications.
Yeah.
Now,
And it can be tough for some engineers too, 'cause like I've met some engineers that, they're pushed to see how much AI they're able to use to achieve something, and it's taken some of the fun out of it, of the problems that they used to solve, and then maybe they didn't have enough time to play, so they didn't get to figure out ways to prompt it to make a more scalable, maintainable architecture, like more useful outputs of AI. So then you end up with technical debt at a scale that's hard to maintain, right? Like there's all
Interesting.
these different aspects of emotional like weight that you add when you run too fast.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, yesterday in my session, I asked people, I said, imagine you're all part of the same organization and you're at a, an all hands meeting, and your boss says, hey, everybody, we are going to turn the corner and be an AI first organization. All right. Welcome, Eric.
Hey there. Sorry to be late.
Hey,
Had a meeting
no
pop up
worries.
here.
Great to have you.
No worries.
We're just, you've jumped in on a conversation about, I'm giving a little summary of my session at SoCal Dreamin' yesterday, and also just highlighting some aspects of, the long, circuitous road of upskilling your team, but maintaining and keeping all of that history and valuable experience in the business versus, potentially losing them by trying to move too fast
Cool.
when we think
Yeah.
about something like AI. So I asked in my session yesterday, I said, imagine you're all part of the same company. We're at an all hands meeting, and your boss, without any prior background, no insight as far as what people are doing, he comes up and says, hey, we're going to be an AI first company. How are you guys feeling right now in the back of your head? Everybody is like concerned, right? And what's likely, what are many of you going to go home and do tonight as you think about what your boss said? What do you think they said?
See if my job's replaceable.
That and update my resume. That's what they said,
Okay.
right? So I was highlighting that, right? It's a great example in that people without any background, without any context, by saying you're AI first, that immediately gives people the impression that means people last.
Is it true?
Right?
True. There's a
And
history
it's
of, companies. Sorry, Mike. There's a history of like Amazon saying we're going to be API first. And that was a cool thing from a technical perspective. But when you say we're going to be AI first, maybe it's set in the same plane of, hey, technologically, we're going to be AI first. But it bleeds into human activity, and that's different. Mike, what are you saying?
Eric, I think you and I had the same level of excitement and same analogy, except I was thinking of the mobile first wave.
Okay, go for it.
Right? So no, I mean it's the same concept of like it was really cool when people said we're going to build mobile first,
Right.
responsive,
Yeah.
best user experience design,
Yeah.
and like rethinking of like how architectures or frameworks we could use, right? And because we were still driving it.
Yeah, I mean the example I gave people is like one, what I was trying to motivate and what I'm trying to motivate right for our listeners as well is that you can achieve a much better outcome if you can get the people that are already there to believe with you, right? To see that future, to have that common goal, and to incorporate them and enlist them into the process of discovering it, validating it, testing it, and ultimately iterating and improving on it. Those are the people who've made essentially over time, they've earned the trust of the customer. So if you're going to start to extend this to the customer, you're going to want customer feedback and you need someone to mediate that. They don't want to be interfacing with only the tech when they're providing feedback related to the tech that's not working. It's like Taco Bell. Right? They rolled out AI to 500 of their drive-throughs without piloting it. It was a total disaster. Right? If they would have had people who are involved and said, hey, look, here's an override customer. If this isn't working for you, right? Push this button, say this thing, whatever, and we'll get you a person right away and you can give us your feedback. They probably would have avoided a lot of that headache.
There is a so I'm going back and forth in my head between there are some jobs that are so simple in their definition that are purely operation, they're operationally defined and they're low risk. There's something that AI can do. There is a small category of jobs,
Like repetitive tasks.
repetitive tasks, summarization without any particular knowledge or skills that required aggregation, whatever, that are replaceable. However, first of all, that depends on your company. There are some companies that use a lot of those people, and they will be transformed shockingly fast and to the detriment of their employees when people implement technology. A friend of mine implemented automatic mapping in the 90s for home loan appraisals. They used to have three people that would go look up in the Thomas Guide, what is the address of this property, and find the GPS coordinates and put it into a database. And my friend wrote an application. He got the CD from the Thomas Guide company and wrote some code that, using some simple math, would just find out what the GPS was, and it was good enough. And three people probably lost their jobs from that. That kind of thing was like not very skilled, but there was no good way to do it without, until the data was digitized.
Similar jobs. This was the 90s. This has been happening for 30, 40, 50 years. We talk about calculators, or they were called calculators, is what the people who used to do Excel spreadsheets, right?
Yeah, you're talking about VisiCalc,
No, even before, there were humans
1979.
in the
Yes,
50s
spreadsheets.
who used to run spreadsheets,
Yes.
and their jobs were replaced by, spreadsheets, the Microsoft Excel fine. So this isn't new, and there's a new kind of job that's much more about language and parsing language that is going to be replaced or affected. At the same time, there's so much hype right now about how autonomous the agents are going to be. Everything I'm seeing is the agents can prep work for humans so that humans can make decisions faster, and there should always be a human in the loop. So maybe a human can handle more work per person in terms of approvals or reviews, but the data aggregation and research and collation is something that something else can do for the human. But I don't think a lot of people who announce, hey, we're going to be AI first, actually break it down to, hey, there's two kinds of your job. There's a kind of job that doesn't require a lot of thought, and there's a kind of job where you need some executive function. I'm not saying executive people. I'm saying you're an expert in your task. Where you're an expert in that task, and it requires, it's just hard to define, and you've learned this over years, like there's still human in the loop judgment that has to happen there. So it's a long way of saying, sure, of course, some jobs will be affected, but also, as somebody who's stewing in it right now, watching it, I'm skeptical that people will be so replaced. I just think productivity is going to go higher. I sound like I'm drinking Kool-Aid, but I don't see a lot of replacement happening.
Well, I'd say this is probably Kool-Aid that more people would like to order.
It takes a lot of work to define a human's job and make it into a very widely capable agent. Mike, sorry. I think the sentiment of what you said, like there's an opportunity for developers to be more productive,
Yes.
is true. I think the issue you missed out because we were talking about this earlier that I brought
Sorry.
up was that there's companies that are, there's a crawl, walk, run to AI. They're trying to run.
Yeah.
And then what happens is developers feel less productive because they didn't have, like, for example, I had a lot of time to play with AI and learn like the bad, the good, the ugly, and figure out like how do I scale this architecture? How do I talk to it to actually do things the way I want? But some of these companies, they'll give you like a $90 budget. Not like thousands of dollars budget like I was playing with, and they don't have enough time to play, and they have to meet some metric of how they used it, and then they implement the technical debt of like 50 people, and now they're not excited to look at that work anymore. But then
Totally.
there's other people like me who've done amazing stuff with AI. I'm overhyping
Yeah,
myself, sorry.
but it
I've
is
done
impressive.
things, I've done cool stuff with AI, I'll say
Yes.
that. And I had success using it to implement stuff. But I had a lot of time to play, and I don't know that everyone, like, we're not all operating that same way. And I just wonder what's it going to take for them to realize that there's a play cycle that needs to happen before you
Yeah.
just jump into it.
It's like we're starting a marathon, and I know somebody who did this, running a marathon without doing all the prep ahead of time. Oh
Wow.
my God, it was such a bad experience.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
You need
Keep going.
endurance. You need to warm up. You need skills. You need breathing skills. You need, when do I take my sugar rush, my gel goo?
When you
You
need
know.
support too, right? You got like trail angels or whatever who are helping you
Yeah.
along the way.
Yeah. So I th that is something I'm seeing a lot too, is the use cases that are chosen for these projects are complex, multi-system, API necessary use cases, and they're trying to go live with the agent, which what agents are different in that you don't go live after testing and be done. You go live after testing and then you continue testing and you continue tuning. So there are different tools. You have to have a very finely tuned testing skill set post go live so you can react, because there is no way you'll get enough real world data in your testing cycle to be able to tune for all the tone you want. And
your priorities and goals are going to change after go live.
That's
Like
true.
we just realized at Salesforce, we were deployed the SDR agent. And after go live, we realized, we want to actually start using title in the lead to change the tone of how we address someone in an email.
Interesting. So like an executive versus a VP or
Yeah.
something like that.
And because we were talking the wrong way in our emails, that requirement, we were too novice as a team. We didn't know that that would be our requirement. So going live ends up revealing even more things you didn't talk about. And there's just no way to know all these things ahead of time. It's not about testing logic, it's about testing context. You're going to run into context you didn't know about.
Yeah. It's interesting. I want to share while you're talking here. So that for those watching on YouTube, can you guys see my background?
Yeah.
So what I'm showing you here is this is a simple chart from the World Economic Forum's 2025 Future of Work. Can you guys read the copy there?
Yeah.
Yep.
So look, I just to talk, you bring up a really good point around the skill set around testing and tuning afterwards, because that's not just a technical endeavor.
It's
There's a
subjective.
lot of human engagement in that that needs to be embedded in this agent to be effective. As people are having a conversation and they're still expecting to have some kind of a familiar conversation, which requires the agent to at least emulate aspects of human conversation, right? And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, look at the number one skill that employers are looking for, analytical thinking. Which I find interesting in contrast to, I'm curious what your thoughts are because, there was that MIT study on the high frequency users of ChatGPT demonstrate cognitive decline in that particular use case or cohort. But yet analytical thinking is the number one thing that employers are looking for.
To me, that's because you will need to now question everything that's given to you to make sure that it is true and appropriate. To me, that's where this is coming from. Like, if I'm working, if Notebook LM is my thought partner, or Gemini is my thought partner, I'm going to ask it questions, and then I have to actually think. It just recommended something. I need to think about, does that apply to my situation, or how do I use this and change my question so I have a different approach? I think that's the analytical thinking. I mean, of course, we can look at data and reports and try to uncover insights by looking at reports and data like this one. What we need from here is, in this, me being analytical, oh, interesting. What does analytical mean? I need to run a different report now that says, are we talking about skepticism? Are we talking about data analysis? What is analytical thinking in this context? How is it defined?
I'm curious, like for example, like I just started doing a bunch of Trailhead again and got my innovator badge. But I feel like my brain's a little different than it was before I got on the AI wave. Like I feel like doing Trailhead again and like getting deep into that stuff, like it's harder for me to synthesize stuff down. Like it takes me longer, like noticeably longer to read that content. I notice myself rereading things multiple times because I can't get that quick dopamine hit of just getting the answer synthesized down, you know, and I'm wondering, is that grouped in analytical thinking?
I don't know. You were working with like full stack, right? I mean, your learning was what you were learning. What's the capability of the tool? 'Cause I'm accessing it directly and I'm changing flags and I'm querying things and I'm tuning Pinecone or whatever. I think that's the things you were doing. But it was really about your learning about how the guts work, and I think Trailhead is operating at a business level where it's forcing you not, it's limiting you. The Salesforce platform limits you from actually having hands on the underlying reasoning engine or the underlying RAG concepts that people use. And there's an interface between you and the system. And maybe you know a lot about how the back end works. And so
you have preconceived notions that are normal and natural and good for somebody who's doing full stack. So you're tying back to what John was saying. People who use a lot of AI are they it changes the way they are. Maybe what was it called? What did you say, John?
Well, I don't know if we're talking about the exact same thing, but the report showed cognitive decline in
Okay.
how the
Can't say
report
Mike has
defined that.
cognitive decline.
I
Right?
might, like, I feel like I'm not
Well,
as
but in
quick.
Mike's case, it's kind of like almost like the cognitive incentive changed.
Because as a developer, you think about like what makes the best developers. Like if they're lazy in the sense that they find the path of least resistance to get the same result, right? Like my brain's
Very
almost
efficient,
getting
right?
rewired to be like, why would I have to meet all those people and read all those business requirements when I can use AI to synthesize it all down into technical requirements that I just quickly review and distribute?
I think that is the, and I don't say this against you. I think we're going through a cycle where there's a sophomoric intermediate stage that we're in, where some people are assuming that AI can do away with lots of stuff, and that we're going to find out in a year. Oh, we did get 80% of the way there with just AI, but then we still need UAT. We still need concepts like feedback on tone, feedback on whatever aggressiveness or whatever the term is when you're engaging with a customer. Are you pushy? Are you soft? Are you drawing somebody in? There's human factors that probably may not have ever been defined before in just plain old logic. What's this, John?
It's true. Well, I want to highlight because you're both highlighting this as well. So first, for those watching on YouTube, you can find the Salesforce Trails and Trials on YouTube, and the link is in the show notes. But I'm also now showing a figure, a chart in the same report, a couple pages later. We saw the core skills that employers are looking for. This is now in the marketplace what people perceive as skills on the rise and skills in decline, which I think is interesting and somewhat salient to this conversation. So you can see here on the right, those items that are in blue are on the rise, in green are steady, and then in purple are on the decline. So I thought this was a very interesting paradigm because you can see, of course, AI and big data is the leader as it relates to the net increase. But if you look at, right, technical literacy, creative thinking. So that's interesting because, Mike, some of what you described, I might be in the creative thinking category, that there's a reward when we leverage some of that problem solving, pursuing routes that are unexpected, maybe, connecting different ways of doing things or different paradigms in new and creative ways.
Yeah,
Creative
no,
thinking is number four.
and that makes sense. I think the skill set that helps me kind of want to short circuit the whole thing is when you speak to an audience of 100 people and you gave them instructions, what percentage of those people can actually follow them? And I feel like whatever that skill is, I don't know what category that falls under, like that's a skill that does really well with AI.
So when you say it does very well with AI, do you mean like AI supports that process or it enables the people who receive those
It
instructions?
rewards you enormously for the result. The better you're able to describe what you want and the ways that you can figure out how to short circuit it to get you what you want. Just like an audience of people, like when you figure out, like you do your first presentation and you see how many people do it and you iterate, right? You have as your audience is AI with infinite amount of until you run out of money, right? Of cycles that you can put it through to see like what can you tweak and change to get the maximum result of
So
people
this is
building the same
specifically
thing.
about you coming up with a list of instructions that can be well followed by other people. That's your skill that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I just don't know what category that falls under, but I feel like that's a very valuable skill.
Yeah.
Well,
At
I
the same
think that
time, go
potentially,
ahead.
go ahead, Eric.
Well, I have been blown away by how bad my skill is when I've asked Gemini to create a prompt for me and specify the instructions, and it blows me away. So my skill is not good at that, but I'm able to ask ChatGPT to create instructions for me or Gemini, and it comes back with, this is what you want your prompt to look like. So, like, I guess I'm like, am I disagreeing with you, Mike, or am I talking about just a different angle on the same thing?
So what's interesting is in the last year, it's gotten way better
It
at
has.
actually telling the instructions. So sometimes I'm literally asking it to make instructions. Like I'll have it build an entire checklist for me just to review and then make my tweaks with my knowledge of how to tweak it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, certainly
But
one
like,
example
but,
might be,
oh,
here we have
sorry.
systems thinking,
Yeah.
right? I think which is one. There's the
Uh-huh.
analytical thinking again. I found this one is interesting, the curiosity and lifelong learning. So that's an aspect, the curiosity, the drive to want to explore and find new and creative ways. And then I found this one is interesting as well, which is the leadership and social influence, right? The ability to motivate, onboard, enlist others in some of these initiatives is a top 10.
That's interesting. Yeah, keep going.
And so one thing I would say, just so we're on the same page, I 100% am with you, Eric. If I can get it to give me all the instructions the first time, great. But usually that exercise that you're talking about is how I know when I need to bring in more context. I always am curious what I can get out of it from the first prompt, and then I keep iterating. Or even just knowing the tool, like I can't tell you how many folks I've met that have tried Gemini and it just defaults to Flash, and they don't realize if you switch it to Pro, like it's a more complex model. It might take a little bit longer, but like that right there in itself, like if they spent hours with Flash, they train themselves on expectations that are going to be way different than if they tried Pro. But
Interesting.
anyways, that's a separate tangent, but this is an example of a human loop. That feedback loop reinforces an ideology of like it not being good enough. But
The AI not being good enough.
yes.
Interesting.
But sorry, John, I might have got away
No
from your
worries. Well, I
points.
was
It's
going to
just
highlight, we just have a few minutes left here. So I was going to, just as an example of how some of these tools can be put into practice, because I think what both of you demonstrate really well, and I certainly try and do myself, is there's an aspect of being able to articulate and talk about these things, and that certainly talks, technical literacy is high on this list as well. But having a mentality that I need to turn my knowledge into evidence, artifacts, demonstrable resources that can support not only myself, but others on the same journey and kind of help them onboard faster. And so what I'm doing with AI right now, because I want to find more creative uses, is I'm looking at kind of all of the areas of like the tools that I use in my day-to-day world. So for example, I used Bitly a lot to shorten URLs when I want to post on social, because if I only get 180 characters on, Twitter, I don't want to use up 40 of them with a really long URL, which is like a PDF or something. Well, now, Bitly is a great product and they have the right to do this. I never paid for it. So on the free version, they start introducing ads now. So you go to Bitly, it's going to show an ad and then it's going to forward people after that. So there's like an interstitial now. And I'm like, well, that's neat, but I'd like to avoid that. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to go look among the open source community and see what open source projects on GitHub exist. And I found one called DeVito. It's a great product, but it's written in Elixir, which I've actually never heard of. I don't know how to use it, but you know what? I have the world's greatest translator on my desk. So I opened up VS Code, I download the project, I bring up Klein, and I say, hey, look, analyze this project, and I want to convert the whole thing over to PHP and using Laravel as the framework. All right, great. Takes about 7 minutes. And the whole thing is now running in PHP Laravel, which is a server that I can
Incredible. How much did
support,
that cost you?
right?
You get the well in terms of
Yeah,
compute.
it cost me about $6.
Six
Wow.
dollars to convert a
Right?
project from
And I'm
one
able to
language to
customize it a little
another.
bit. So now I have my own forwarder, so johnklein.com/L. And
Nice.
anything I put after that, I have my own domain forwarder that I don't have to use anymore. It keeps basic
Genius.
stuff. And it, to me, it was an element of it's not high security. Someone gets access to my URL forwards, no issue, right? And I actually did experiment with taking what I had in PHP Laravel. There's an OWASP, top 10 exploits page that focuses on protecting Laravel. So in client, I just pointed and said, hey, take this app, analyze it against these 10 exploits, and build for me a checklist. And we're going to go through and we're going to fix something and go through the test plan, make sure we didn't regress and break anything. Great. Deploy, commit to the repo and let's do it again. And I can create this very deliberate process of using the data on there with the analysis of the data. And I'm not even a, I've never been a PHP developer. I know a little bit, but to me that was very exciting. And so that's the second project. I had my RSVP one because I like running events at my house, and so I
This
don't
is
want to
two
use
projects
Invite.
now that you've done
So I have two
ports from other
projects now.
languages.
Yeah, and I encourage other people to do the same. The open source community is so valuable. And now I can put this out there and publish it and say, look, if you want a PHP version of this, here it is.
That's awesome.
So that feels, you talk about the dopamine and the reward, right? So that whole process took a little bit. And I'll share one more thing that I think is really valuable. As I was doing, I was resolving an issue that first I on my local computer, I ran it on the root. So like localhost, right? But on my server, I had to run it in a subdirectory. Well, that means I have an extra level of complication around URL redirects. So I said, I need to fix that, but I want to learn how to fix that. So I brought it back down to my computer and I said, listen, we got a subdirectory up there. We need to emulate the subdirectory here on my local computer. And I don't want you to do it. I want you to tell me what I need to put into my own command line and I want to go through the process. So it took me longer, but I essentially had a coach that was walking me through saying, okay, here are the internal command line tools we can use for Laravel to test, to do the URL redirects. And I actually learned myself how to do that, how to resolve it, because AI was telling me, okay, now try this. And
Because
now try
you
this.
knew to ask the question.
Yes.
You chose to ask the question. I was listening to a podcast this week about AI and learning, and they had some kids call in, and a bunch of kids called in from MIT to talk about how they're using AI. And they were using it in great ways to learn whatever better. But those were the ones who wanted not to take the shortcut. They wanted to learn. Why didn't you take the shortcut, John?
Yeah, I
Why
wanted
didn't
to learn.
Just
I wanted to get the objective done, but I wanted to get the insights along the way. So if I ever had a problem like this in the future, I'm not totally like what I don't want is I don't want to forget to drive by having my car drive for me. Right? I don't want to, I still manually dial phone numbers sometimes because I don't want to forget the phone number just because it's in my address book. So that's a little bit of my, I don't know what you would call that, in the days of Roosevelt and rugged individualism. There is an aspect of that that I want to gain the benefits without losing the capacity.
And that's so interesting, John, because like as I was, I just made a big career decision on which direction I wanted to go, and I had to just ask myself, do I want to write code still? Because I haven't demonstrated any conditioning to practice like doing hacker ranks and algorithms or any of the more custom, hard, challenging problems anymore. And if I want to keep my brain fresh on that, I have to accept that, I'm not going to let it do the autopilot.
That's the lifelong learning that is one of those factors that John was saying people
Yeah.
require.
Well, and I think that what I like about these little personal projects, because there's a zillion things people could do. I mean, you can also create little things with, like your Arduino devices, and there's all kinds of stuff people can do. But I think to get the dopamine feedback, the incentive, you got to have some kind of deliverable. Like there's got to be something at the end that it's not just
What's your
nebulous
product?
learning. You got to drive towards some kind of a goal
Hey,
that you
goal.
can then kind of say, hey, look, I did this, even if it's just for myself. And that gives
Totally.
you the incentive of actually taking the tougher, more meandering road.
100%.
Right. Well, that sounds like a good place to wind up our call today, guys. Always a pleasure. Our users love. Or excuse me, our listeners love hearing these stories. Thank you for sharing. Excited to continue with you on your journey, Mike, as you are deep in training and showing. I'm sure Eric remembers this too, but how much value a technical architect at Salesforce is enabled to bring. So appreciate that. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank
All
you.
right. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this with another who would benefit.